Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Today we have Nate Harvey, an evaluator for trailing and track and sign in the cyber tracker process. He holds senior tracker status. He also has a website called Trackers Trail. We are happy to have Nate Harvey on the radio today. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Nate.
You're welcome, Garth. Anytime.
And so you're an evaluator for cyber tracker trailing and track and sign, is that right?
That's correct.
So I was hoping to get into the what trailing animals is like for the cyber tracker evaluations. What's a brief overview of what cyber tracker is for those that don't know what it is?
Cyber tracker conservation was started in South Africa by Louis Liebenberg. Louis studied with master trackers in the Kalahari. They were Kalahari Bushmen, our Kalahari Bushmen trackers, for maybe 20 years. And the way I understand the story is that several of them asked Louis to help them get work as trackers. And Louis, who had been trained as a scientist, then created CyberTracker software, which was used on a palm pad to record data in the field. And the palm pad had a GPS unit attached to it. This was 20 years ago when the technology was relatively primitive compared to what it is now. And he created a software unit, cyber tracker, where the icons were all drawings so that they could be used by illiterate trackers in the field. And they would, you know, click on the picture of an animal or the type of track it was or scat or feeding sign or whatever. And the GPS unit would record that data point in that place. And in this fashion, he empowered a small group, because there were not many native trackers left, and there are very few now. He empowered them to go into the field and collect data for wildlife researchers, who then found that they were getting a rich array of data, which was not comparable to anything that had been gathered in the field before. These trackers were gathering data that was 100% accurate about all manner of wildlife behavior in the field, and it was suddenly available to them. Now, when Louis created that software package, he quickly realized that he needed to do something else as well, which was to ascertain the quality of the trackers who were gathering the data. I mean, he knew a number of them personally, but he wanted to ensure that people who were going to be using this software in the field would be qualified so that the data could be reliable data. And he set up an evaluation system in order to, you know, test them on their skill levels. And the cyber tracker evaluation for track and sign ID, both of the evaluations are pretty complex. The one for track and sign ID in particular, the questions are beginning level, intermediate level, you know, the difficulty is of a variety of levels, and depending on the difficulty, you assign a value to this particular question based on its difficulty. And so the test is very complex, but it's a two-day test that happens entirely in the field based on what is found in the field, tracks, sign, bedding sign, feeding sign, scats, anything of mammals, birds, insects. It could be human sign, which could be confused for wildlife sign. So the track and sign ID evaluation ascertains a tracker's skill level based on those things and then assigns a score to it. And
yeah, I myself have taken that a couple times, and wow, it's quite a learning experience. I really enjoyed it.
We found that, it's an interesting idea to test people on their skills before they even necessarily have had training. And people are often uncomfortable with that because our training, our education trains us in part to be afraid of tests.
Yeah.
But pretty quickly, people recognize during a CyberTracker evaluation, they drop their fear of whatever their score was going to be, and they start to understand it as a training, because we're not just asking people, you know, tell me what this is, and then you either get it right or you don't. You know, we'll run through a series of questions with a group of participants, which might be 10 people, and we might run through a dozen or 18 questions in a go, where people give us their answers, and then we'll go back and really take people through all the steps, all the evidence that helps us arrive at the answer that we come to. So it's not really a test. I mean, it is a test. Some people are going for a score. Most people are not, because really the score is only relevant if you're at a very high level. So people get pretty quickly that it's a training. But what we found, and this is where I really kind of launched into this long explanation, is what we found is that testing puts people on edge a little bit, and that edge helps them to remember the information.
Yeah.
So if I simply take you out along some stream bank and say, whose track is this or whose scat is that, you know, and then give you an explanation about, you know, the toes are like this and the palm pads are like that, you're probably not really going to remember it. But if you suddenly are invested in the score, like you're playing a game of Jeopardy, something like that, if you're invested in the score on some level, then you remember the information. And so that's part of why we really... You know, that's part of why we really go into these trainings as tests.
Yeah.
Because it helps people remember them.
Well, I could see how taking the track and sign one a couple times, I can see how it works and stuff. But I'm definitely curious. I've never taken the trailing one. And
the trailing one is quite different.
Yeah.
The trailing,
how does that work?
So the aim of trailing is to get on a fresh trail and follow it until you see an animal. It's very difficult. I mean, traditionally, it's a hunter's skill. And, you know, Brian McConnell, who trained me to be an evaluator, he was the first evaluator. He was the first person evaluated at the senior level in North America, the evaluation having been conducted by Mark Elbrock, who was trained in South Africa. So Mark is an author of field guides. Your listeners may recognize his name. He's just put out a whole heap of fantastic field guides to track and sign identification. I mean, it's just brought tracking to a whole new level, really around the world. But in North America, we have now got some of the best resources for track and sign identification in the world, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mark brought the system back from South Africa. He went out and started conducting evaluations, and this guy appeared who had grown up as a hunter in Arkansas. You know, by the time he was 10 years old, Brian could pretty well take care of himself in the woods. I mean, you know, he went home at night, of course, to his mom and dad, but Brian really grew up hunting in the woods.
Yeah.
And Brian is, I mean, it's just wonderful to watch him work, and I continue to be astonished by what he does every time I'm with the guy. I mean, it's astonishing. Anyway.
So you got some of your training from Brian?
I got my training to be an evaluator from Brian. I mean, Brian evaluated me. You know, I did a series of trailing evaluations, until eventually I was evaluated as a specialist in trailing, which is to say that when you're evaluated in trailing, the aim is to take the evaluator and the group of participants, which can number as many as four. So the group may be five. Sometimes there's actually six if there's an assistant. But the person who's walking point, the person being evaluated, needs to take the group to see an animal, to see the animal whose trail you're following. And when I did it, I was working, you know, my colleague George Leoniak and I were being evaluated at the same time. And George and I took the evaluators to see a moose. Brian had done it, been evaluated by Mark on deer, and then subsequently by Adrian Lowe, who's a South African evaluator who evaluated him on black bears out on the West Coast. So the aim is to take the group to see an animal, and what you're being evaluated on as you do it are a number of different distinct skill sets. One is your ability to recognize the spoor. Spoor is tracks and sign, generally. So one is the ability to recognize the spoor. And, you know, recognizing a track, let's just say tracks, recognizing a track in moss is different from recognizing it in grass or leaf litter or snow or gravel or anything else. I mean, once you start trailing, the variety of substrates is just infinite. It's fantastic. Yeah. And so you've got to recognize the spoor in these different substrates, and you've got to do it in difficult, in, you know, different terrain. I mean, if I take you down to a stream bank, here are deer tracks, and they're quite obvious. And they might be quite obvious in mud along a stream, in clay, and sometimes they're obvious in grass, but sometimes they're really indistinct. And so at a high level, the trailer, the tracker who's being evaluated needs to be able to recognize the sign in difficult substrates.
And do they point out different tracks and different substrates?
And you're following, as you follow the trail, you're pointing the tracks out to the evaluator, but you don't have to do that with every one. That would just purely be a distraction. But, you know, you might run your finger along your hand, and you're not going to see all the tracks. You're just not. Nobody sees all the tracks.
Yeah.
So that's one category. Another category is anticipating where you're going to find the spoor when you lose the tracks. So in the same way that, you know, we might walk down a trail in a national park and, you know, because we're people and we're used to walking human trails, we get pretty familiar with where the trail is going to be. And the trail may be fairly indistinct sometimes if you get off trail, but still you can kind of see the trail. You know what I'm talking about? It goes around that tree or up behind that rock, or you can kind of make it out. I mean, your instinct is to follow a particular path based on the fact that you and everybody else sees the landscape in the same way, you and all the other people.
Right.
So you have to get the person doing the trailing gets familiar with how deer see the landscape,
or
how moose see it, and so you start to anticipate where the trail is going to go. You know, when I started following bears, a bear is a great big animal, and so you think, well, gee, the bear is not, you know, the bear is going to follow a trail kind of like my trail. I'm going to walk around trees, around shrubbery, but when you start trailing them, the first thing that becomes apparent is they go through all kinds of gnarly stuff.
Wow.
I mean, things that you would never expect an animal that size to go through.
Yeah.
So, but you have to do that in order to be able to anticipate where to pick up the trail. So you lose the trail, you need to find the trail. That's anticipating the spoor. So you've got recognizing the spoor, anticipating the spoor. One category is your awareness of the landscape, your awareness of birds who are alarming on the land, who might, you know, alarm you as you walk the trail, who might communicate. You know, deer will pick up the alarm from the birds, and they'll understand that you're there before you're ever within eyesight based on what the birds are doing.
Yeah.
So you've got to have some understanding of some awareness. You've got to demonstrate your awareness of what's going on the landscape. That's a third category. You have to be stealthy in your movement. You know, how you move on the trail is another category, and how you approach the animal is a fifth category. So how you strategize about approaching the animal when you've got to first of all recognize when the trail is really hot.
Now, when you say hot, you mean like aging, really fresh?
Yes. So let's use as a basic example that you're following a deer trail, and it's been going along in leaf litter, and suddenly it comes down into a vernal pool, and the animal walks in the water and then comes up out of the water, and you recognize where the trail is coming up out of the water. Now, you know, let's say it's a warm day. The water that drips off the animal when it emerges from the water is going to dry, right?
Right.
And if it's depending on the conditions of the day, that those drips will dry up pretty quick.
Yeah.
So if you're following a trail and the animal's gone into the water and you find the place where it's come out of the water and those drips are still wet, then you know you're on a hot trail.
Mm-hmm.
If you find scat out here, you know, in mid-July, deer, you know, they'll scat, and within maybe like 20 minutes, the dung beetles will be going into those pellets. And you can recognize, you know, fresh deer scat has a sheen on it, and it's got this kind of mucous membrane, and the mucous membrane dries up, and blah, blah, blah. But if you're in pretty warm, humid conditions in mid-July, which is relatively standard out here in New England where I am, and dung beetles have not hit that scat, then you know you're on a hot trail.
So does that, do you need to change your tracking behavior in any way?
Yes.
I imagine you'd be more stealthy, but...
Oh yes. At that point, your movement on the trail becomes like, you know, you're just creeping at a snail's pace, and watching everywhere, you know, because you don't know where exactly the trail is going to go. Deer wander all over the place when they're feeding, so you know you've really got to be paying rapt attention. Listening, watching very closely, and if you're looking through the woods, you're not going to see a whole body. You're going to see the flick of an ear or the flick of a tail, you know,
as it's,
you know, swiping at a fly or something. So you're really watching for the smallest sign, because the point of the evaluation is to point the animal out to the evaluator before the animal ever is aware of your presence. And then you've got to take the group out of the area so the animal never knows you were there.
Wow.
The person who does that is accorded a specialist certificate, and then you're a specialist in trailing. And then you get to train to be an evaluator, which is a whole other thing. So that's what the trailing evaluation is.
I can give you
a little of the history of that if you like.
Sure, yeah, definitely.
So in South Africa, you know, there are like 15,000 professional trackers. And they're working primarily for the ecotourism business. And they guide groups of tourists to see lions. And this, you know, it's not just South Africa. I mean, they do this with gorillas in East Africa, and they do it with different animals in different places around the world. But in South Africa, where the cyber tracker evaluations were pioneered, the reason they were doing this, you know, about trailing was in order to be able to tell a game lodge or a private reserve that the tracker that they're hiring can take a group of people safely to view lions.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that place, they've got lions and leopards and water buffalo and elephants and hippopotamus and rhinoceros and a whole group of animals that will kill you if they see you.
Wow, so, yeah, safely is a big important thing there.
So safely is a big deal. It's a big deal. And so a lot of the test really is about, you know, verifying that the person on the trail has an approach which is safe. You know, here in North America, we would really only be tested in a comparable way if we take somebody on a grizzly bear trail.
Yeah.
So are they
the evaluators? Is this whole thing silent and they're not like questioning you through this? They're just observing how you're doing it, or is there a question process involved?
Well,
also,
we do question people as we go on the trail, and we do it as quietly as we can. And the questions are like, you know, where's the wind coming from now? Where do you expect that this trail is going? Where do you? What do you? What is the animal doing? What behavior are you recognizing in the trail? When do you think this trail was made? Those kinds of questions. Where does the participant? Where does the person who's following the trail expect to find a bed? Because, you know, if I'm just following a trail, a deer trail that goes straight through the woods and it's not breeding season, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, breeding seasons, it just makes it a different thing. But if I'm following a trail that goes straight through, let's take this as an example. Let's say I follow a trail which is just looping around. It's kind of wandering this way and that way. This is characteristic of feeding trails, that what they're doing is they're feeding. If that trail then starts to walk relatively straight toward a particular type of area where I would expect to find a bed, then I need to recognize that that's what's happening. This animal now has fed, and now it's probably going to a bed. And I'll look in particular for, like a hillside that might offer a sight advantage. I mean, this is what I'm looking for out here in New England, where the terrain is relatively hilly.
Yeah.
Where there's a sight advantage, because deer like to have a sight advantage when they're bedding. You know, I might look for them in particular areas of cover where they've got some good cover but can see a bit through the undergrowth, that kind of thing. So it's really, you know, the person who's being evaluated needs to recognize what's going on in the trail and where they are liable to find the quarry. I mean, this trail might be 4 hours old. It might be from last night sometime, because often in our understanding of the age of a trail, it can be relatively vague like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to recognize, you know, that I'm on a trail which might be 6 hours old, but that deer might be right over there.
Right, yeah.
So where are those places? And that's what we want to know from people.
Now, how do the levels get dictated? I know in the track and sign, the questions are worth points, and at the end, you kind of see what percentage you get, and that dictates your level. Is this one more specific on the, not just the points, but also the type of animal you're trailing?
Well, yes, it sure can be. There's easy trails, difficult trails, very difficult trails, and then there's extremely difficult trails, beyond which there are just unreasonably difficult trails. So let's say there are five categories. Unreasonably difficult simply falls out. You know, we drop that one. It's like, you know, I've got quite a bit of experience, and I don't see the trail. I don't know where the trail is. That's an unreasonably difficult trail. Trying to see a trail on asphalt is unreasonably difficult.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there are other substrate, rock. I mean, there are ways that you might find a rock which is overturned, whatever. You can see stuff sometimes in those places, but let's just call them unreasonably difficult and drop them. So you've got four remaining categories. Level one is an easy trail, and let's say I'm following a moose on a wood road after it rained 2 inches last night, and those tracks are like, it's like following a moose on a sandbar.
Yeah.
Where the sand is soft. It's like you can see the tracks for 75 yards out in front of you. That's an easy trail now, or very easy. But I mean, you know, so you may not see it for 75 yards, and it still might be easy. You might only be able to see it for 5 yards. But the tracks are clear and unmistakable. It's an easy trail.
Yeah.
That's a level one. And if I'm comfortable, you know, if the participant is comfortable on a relatively easy trail, but not comfortable on the next level, then he's level one. If the participant is comfortable on a difficult trail, but not on a very difficult trail, then he's level two. Similarly, if you're comfortable on a very difficult trail, but not one which is extremely difficult, then you're level three. And if you can handle an extremely difficult trail, then you're a specialist. Generally, if you're at that level, then you've had some experience recognizing all the stuff you need to recognize so that you know when you're close and what to do when you're close,
so,
which is what takes you to the animal.
when you get to a trailing eval and you've never taken one before, do you start people out? You find an easy trail and see how they do, and then you'll go and find a harder trail and see how they do, kind of thing?
Well, out here, trails get hard in a hurry.
Okay.
We just go looking for a trail.
Yeah.
You know, if we've been looking for something for an hour and haven't found anything but here there's this old moose trail, I might put somebody on an old moose trail and see what they do. I mean, old moose trails can get extremely difficult relatively quickly, but at least in that situation, you know, the tracks are big.
Yeah.
You know, so you might be able to follow an old moose trail okay, but fresh trails are much easier to follow than old trails. Old trails, let's just say that anything older than like 36 hours is an old trail.
Okay.
Let's just call it that. And let's call recent trails, you know, 12 hours to 36 hours. So that's a recent trail. And a fresh trail might be 3 to 12 hours. And a very fresh trail might be less than 3 hours.
So the hot trail is less than 3.
The hot trail, I would say, is, yeah, the hot, if, yeah. The hot, and these categories, I mean, the thing about track and sign ID is very precise. This animal, we recognize this track because the toes are like this, the palm pads like this, the heel pads are like this, the claws are like this, the step is this long. It's very systematic, it's very analytical, it's very precise, and the answers are generally yes or no. In trailing, you know, assigning an age to a trail is really, it's like, it's difficult.
Yeah.
And if the dung beetle hasn't attacked the scat yet, then I can go, okay, it's a hot trail. But right up to that point, I might think, well, I think this trail is pretty fresh, but I can't tell you that it's 8 hours instead of 4 hours. I mean, sometimes you can. It depends on what time it stopped raining and what time
if you have maybe some big weather event that you can
if you've got
into.
Weather events, you can time things sort of sometimes quite precisely, but generally not that precisely. So trailing involves a lot of it's still all about evidence. Really important, because we can, it's easy to forget, at least over here in North America, there's a lot of, it's just easy for us to forget that this is really evidence-based.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, how do people get a trailing eval in their place, you know, near where they live? Do they just look you up and...
Yeah.
And say, hey, there's a few of us
send
over
me an email,
here that want
say,
to
hey,
do
I wanna...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, there's a bit of this information up on my website, trackerstrail.com.
I'll put a link to that in the notes under this also.
Yeah, that would be great. And really that, the trailing section at that website is really intended to be as complete an introduction to trailing as I can describe. And then there's, you know, if people are want to move past that introduction, they can. But the introduction there, I hope, is relatively thorough.
In yeah, terms that's of my next question helping, was going to be. How do we
in terms of,
learn?
Yeah, well, so finding a place is a big deal. I mean, it's relatively simple. And the website, I hope, helps people to be able to do that. To know where to go. I mean, I think that when I was first learning tracking, I thought, geez, tracking happens somewhere pretty far away, and I need to get someplace out there in the woods. If I'm living in a suburb or something, I need to go to a state park, and that's a great thing to do. But if you live anywhere where there are wild ungulates, where there are deer or elk or anything, and they come through an area which is close to your house, I would start right there. And that can be a relatively suburban neighborhood. I mean, you don't have to go too far from New York City, maybe half an hour.
Yeah.
In order to get to areas where the deer walk through the little bit of woods in the backyard. And there are lots of houses around. So you can really get a lot done in a location like that.
What are some common challenges or pitfalls people get stuck on in learning trailing?
Frustration is the big one. Seeing the tracks, thinking that you've got to see every track. You don't. I think a really big pitfall is old trails. It is difficult to recognize an old trail from a fresh trail. I mean, it's not difficult once you get used to it. But what is difficult is simply getting to the place where you understand that really what you're looking for is something pretty recent. Because once you get a recent trail, it is so much easier to follow that you won't waste your time on old trails anymore. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You know? And you can learn a lot about trailing simply by going for a walk. Really. This is where recognizing a fresh trail or recognizing what's a fresh enough trail to follow is really about recognizing the ground as maybe more even than recognizing the track. I mean, it might not be that hard to recognize a deer track. I mean, depending on the substrate, it can be really hard. But getting used to the ground, okay, look, it's like this. If you're a gardener, you pay attention to the weather because an early spring frost might kill your pear tree. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you plant and what you plant and where you plant is really dictated by the conditions, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm interested in trailing, then I pay attention to the weather the same way a gardener would, except I'm not paying attention to the weather because I'm going to be planting in it. I'm paying attention to the weather because of how it affects the ground.
Yeah, so like on a morning if I notice a lot of dew in the morning, I'd be like, oh, this might be a good morning to go out and practice trailing.
Yeah, or rain.
Yeah.
I mean, really, rain. If rain happened and it ended, if rain has happened in the last 36 hours, go trailing.
Yeah.
It's really like that. And depending on the amount of rain will change what the quality of the ground is. I mean, if you're used to snow, there's powdery snow, there's icy snow, there's slushy snow, there's, you know, and once you get used to following trails in snow, you could break down the category of powdery snow, you know, 20 ways.
Yeah.
And you just recognize that there's all these different kinds of snow. In the same way, there's all these different kinds of leaf litter and all these different kinds of pine duff. And the track is going to show up better if the rain just came. It's just going to be much clearer. And then when you're used to what a relatively recent track looks like, because it just rained last night, you're going to start to recognize, well, these tracks look really like indistinct, and they would certainly be more distinct if they happened after the rain. So if you really are very particular about, if you just start to go for a walk and become observant of what the ground is like in different conditions, then you'll just start to see trails.
Yeah.
And if you follow them, if you use the weather as your guide to when you go trailing, you'll probably be following fresher trails, and they're way easier to follow. They're so much easier that you start to feel like you're succeeding in trailing rather than getting frustrated all the time, because it can be super frustrating.
Have you hit a lot of walls when you were trailing? Say the animal was going someplace that you didn't feel comfortable going or something like that, or I imagine.
Well, that'll happen. Yeah, sure, that'll happen. I mean, the first thing that jumps to mind is, you know, around houses.
Yeah.
Neighbors. Yeah. I don't want to call attention to myself around the neighbors or you know, people I don't know. Or I mean, I don't want to get within a certain distance of a house, something like that. I mean, and safety can be an issue. You don't want to be cornering a black bear. You don't want to be cornering a moose. You don't want to be cornering any wild animal, really.
Yeah.
So you have to be alert to what, you know, the environment is like.
Now, you mentioned predictions a little bit ago about making predictions on where the animal was going. And I have a book, and it mentions three different kinds of predictions: a random, systematic, and speculative. Are those part of the eval? I know you mentioned a little bit of predictions, but that would be the, I'm not sure which one of those were you saying?
All three of those.
All three of them, okay.
All of them. Yeah, well, I mean, yes, in terms of an evaluation, all those are valuable. Now, you're talking about systematic prediction. Let's say I come to a track and I don't see any tracks beyond this, and I try to identify, let's say, three routes of travel. One is the most obvious, and then I've got other potentials. So I stop at a track, I look around in case the animal turned around, turned to the side. I'll just look for another track. Then I'll pick potential routes of travel, and I'll go along those routes of travel until I get to a place that I would call that is called a track plate, where I'm pretty sure if an animal walked there, a track would show up there. And this is based on experience. It's like you recognize track plates more and more the more experience you have. So from my last track, I'll follow the obvious route until I get to a track plate. If I don't find a track there, I'll come back and I'll follow a different route. Now, a track plate might be 5 yards away. I try to keep them as close as I can.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too far. Because the farther you go, the more different routes the animal could have followed. But so this is what I'm describing as a very systematic approach to following a trail. Speculative tracking is really something that we do when we have more experience. And, you know, I don't think you necessarily have a lot of experience following trails in order to have an instinct for where the animal went. Hunters who don't typically use following trails as a hunting method, may have fantastic instincts for where the animal went. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So your experience in the woods, your experience with wildlife, your experience on trails, all these things inform us in terms of where we would speculate we might find the animal. But the more you don't really get into speculative trailing until you've got a bit of experience doing some of those things. And all of them lead us to speculate, you know, where we might find the trail. I can be nothing but a systematic tracker and still be speculating about where the potential routes of travel are. And I can never really have gone trailing but be an excellent hunter and have just a really sharp instinct for where I think that animal went based on my experience of where I find them.
Right. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Wow, this is really great information. It's pretty exciting. I hope to someday try one of these out.
I hope so, too.
Well, thanks for taking the time. Is there anything else that you feel like we missed or you'd like to say?
I don't think there's really anything else I can tell you about trailing. I mean, I hope people will check out my website, trackerstrail.com. I hope people will check out Cyber Tracker Conservation, which is in South Africa, it's cybertracker.org. In North America, it's trackercertification.com. That's where the North American Cyber Tracker evaluators are. I hope people will, you know, start to look for, trackers. I mean, for example, I would just mention beyond the group of evaluators shown at trackercertification.com, I mean, they're great. All of them are fantastic. There's Casey McFarland and Jonah Evans and George Leoniak and Dave Moskowitz, you know, really tremendous trackers teaching people about track and sign identification. Some of those guys also do trailing. Brian McConnell, fantastic at trailing. I mean, just a great teacher. And then I would also mention that, you know, there's guys out on the West Coast, Preston Taylor and Matt Nelson have a little school up there in Northern California, Marble Mountain Adventures. And both of them are, you know, specialists at track and sign ID. In addition to, you know, Preston has been certified as a specialist. I mean, Matt is so close to being a specialist, and they teach, you know, hunting. They teach trailing. They do it on wild pigs. They do it on bear and deer. And, I mean, people should, I would think that the people listening to your show should check out, you know, where these different people are in the country. And then if you've got the opportunity to go and do workshops with any of them, hit it, because
yeah,
they're great.
That's great. You do workshops also?
I do workshops, yep. I do workshops and evaluations and, you know, drop me an email. The contact information is there at the website, and I'm happy to do workshops and evaluations wherever you are.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this and share it, and thanks a lot for coming on the show.
You're welcome, Garth, anytime. Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye now.